This year, I am focused on saving and investing, but I still want to do things like travel. NerdWallet lets you compare top travel credit cards side by side to maximize your spending, some even offering 10 times points on your spending, which means you could end up with a free flight or maybe a better hotel room.
So what could future you do with smarter financial decisions? Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. NerdWallet, finance smarter. Reminder, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply.
Now your ideas don't have to wait. Now they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business, evolving your passions.
We push what technology can do so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com/welcometonow. Hello and welcome to Happier, a podcast about how to be happier, healthier, more productive, and more creative starting right now. This week, we'll talk about why you should do something scary, and I'm going to ask Elizabeth several etiquette questions related to cell phone use. I'm Gretchen Rubin, a writer who studies happiness, good habits, and human nature. I'm in New York City, and with me is my sister, Elizabeth Kraft. And Elizabeth, I think you just naturally have good manners, so I'm going to fire some questions at you about manners.
That's me, Elizabeth Kraft, a TV writer and producer living in LA. And Gretchen, I do have to remind you, I'm the one who's thank you note challenged. So I don't know how good my manners are, but I will try.
Okay. I'll write the thank you notes and you'll handle the cell phone etiquette.
Well, Gretch, before we dive in, we have to remind everyone that it's very exciting that it's your 10th anniversary of the Happiness Project.
Yeah, the book has hit the shelves. It's very exciting, and it's really sweet. Jamie, my husband, has been traveling a lot, and every time he sees it in an airport bookstore, he takes a picture and sends it to me. So it's like, here it is in Denver. It's like, here it is in LaGuardia. So it's been very nice to see it kind of popping up all over the country. I can see it in my feed, so that's been nice.
Yeah, and I got my copy, and I enjoyed reading the updates on everyone, even though, of course, I know what everyone's doing. I still enjoyed reading about what was happening to everyone, including myself.
Right, including yourself. And Elizabeth, you have some good news, too, some exciting news.
Yes, we're almost done shooting the fix. We're done with the scripts, and now we're shooting the last episode.
Now tell everybody, who, if they don't know their Hollywood lingo, like explain a little bit what that means.
Well, shooting is when you're actually filming the show. So that's, and then we'll still be working on it because we'll edit the show after we're done shooting. But that means all the actors, you know, are performing the scenes and we're filming it. And that's happening now. And last week, right in the nick of time, we finished writing this last script. So, yeah, we're almost done with the whole season. And we're incredibly excited about it. We can't wait for everyone to see it. And I wish I could announce our premiere date, but we don't know it yet. But it'll be sometime in the spring, winter, spring of 2019.
Yeah. And if you want to hear more about this process, which I just find fascinating, listen to Happier in Hollywood, because there Sarah and Elizabeth get far more into like the nuts and bolts of it, what's happening on the fix. And Elizabeth, this week our Try This at Home tip is to do something scary. And for the most part, this means literally scary, not just like, ooh, I'm scared to do that, but like, oh my gosh, I'm really actually frightened.
This is so not me. Why is this a good idea?
Well, this is one of the things that the research suggests. So there was recently a really fascinating article about this research by Elizabeth Bernstein in the Wall Street Journal. I'll post a link to it in the show notes, as always. And it's called Using Fear to Break Out of a Funk. And she's talking about research there, which is that when we do something scary, it really boosts our mood. And what the research looked at is people who went through what is called an extreme haunted house. Ugh. This is when it's not just scary things, but like you are grabbed, you get mild electrical shock, you're stuffed in a coffin. And what they find is that afterward, people feel less stressed, they feel less tired. They often even feel euphoric after having gone through an experience like this.
And why do they feel this way? Hormones or what?
But yeah, it has to do with what is happening in our body when we have the fight or flight impulse. And what it seems to be is that while the physical response lasts a few hours, the memory of doing it gives you sort of an ongoing boost if you do put yourself through an experience like this.
So this would be like jumping out of a plane, or is that more of an adrenaline rush? And they're actually talking about like watch a scary movie.
Not watch a scary movie so much, more like jumping out of a plane. In the article, Elizabeth Bernstein uses the example of, I guess she's kind of a scaredy cat, and nevertheless, she went scuba diving in like the coldest water in the world. Mm. And so that was like a very scary thing. You tend to get the best benefit when it's something that makes you feel a loss of control, but that also, if it involves some kind of skill, that's where you're going to get the biggest kind of feeling of like, I did it, I made it. So it's something like mountain climbing, you know, where there is this fear, there is this element of lack of control, and then there is some aspect where you are using skills.
Gretch, would you do this? Would you do something scary like this?
Okay, so
as we recommend it to others.
Yeah, I know. Are we gonna like? Okay, so here's an example. I probably would not do this knowingly, but I kind of accidentally did it. So Elizabeth, you know, every year we go back to Kansas City for a week. And so Elizabeth, so Dad was like, oh, there's this new thing in Swope Park called Go Ape Adventure. And what we thought was that it was like a big zip line. But what it turned out, we went there and it turned out it was more like a ropes course, like a 2 to 3 hour ropes course where you're like up in the treetops and it's like you're doing all kinds of like this weird ladder and this weird tightrope. And you are in, you're locked in, which that to me, I was like, oh my gosh, I feel like, you know, there's carabiners here. Like how can I be using carabiners? I was with Eleanor, Eliza and Dad, all of us up there. I had to do it. They had to do it. I had to worry about Dad. I had to worry about Eliza, of course, about Eleanor. Eliza was skipping along. But the funny thing was, afterwards, it was like we were so excited. You know, we were like, oh my gosh, like we didn't know what it was going to be. And we showed up and then we did it. And it, you know, I mean, I have to say, Eleanor and Dad and I got off halfway through because we were like, we've had our fun. Like, this is enough.
Yeah.
But even still, and they said, you don't have to necessarily succeed.
Mm.
Like, you don't need to make it to the top of the mountain. But it was such a huge adventure and such a happy memory. Even though at the time, I have to say, there were aspects of it that were really, truly scary. So, but I wouldn't have done it if I'd known.
Right. What you were getting into.
Yeah. Now, how about you? Would you do it? Something scary?
I don't think
scary?
So, Gretch. I just do not have this gene. I hate being scared.
Yeah.
Like, we went on a helicopter ride in Hawaii, which I mentioned, to see the volcano. And, I mean, I was glad we did it, but afterward, I didn't feel euphoric. I more felt like, well, I don't think riding a helicopter is such a good idea. Like, I don't think I want to do that again.
Interesting. What about something like a scary movie?
Well, I hate scary movies. See, I get nightmares, so...
Uh-huh.
If I watch a scary movie, I might have a nightmare for like 6 weeks afterwards.
Oh.
So I hate being scared. And I'm very physically tentative. So I don't know that I could do this one.
Well, so maybe this is also a know yourself better question, which is this is a great option to think about if you're feeling in a funk, if you're feeling kind of low and blue, and you know that you do respond to this kind of thing well, maybe it's something that you can look for in the world. Like, is there an opportunity for me to do something like this? But if you're also like, you know what, I don't care what the research shows, this leaves me feeling depleted and anxious and having nightmares for 6 weeks, maybe I'd need to try a different strategy of happiness boosting. You know, it's like there's no one size fits all. Literally... Going scuba diving in, you know, freezing cold water, it's like I don't see the boost from happiness that would come for me. But it's good to know that it's an option. It's a possibility.
And here's my question. Like, if something is intimidating, does that count? Because I do like to challenge myself. For instance, public speaking is very scary to me. Not physically scary, but emotionally scary. And I like to push myself to do that. Does that count or is that different?
That's a great question. I'd be fascinated to know how the research backs up with that. Because you definitely do get a sense of like satisfaction and gratification and completion and I did it. So maybe it's a lesser version or I don't know. Maybe because people really do respond to things like public speaking with fight or flight responses. I mean, the fact that it's not a bear charging at you doesn't mean that your body isn't just as scared. So I would think it would be the same.
Yeah, on that point, Gretch, a friend of a friend of mine was going to pitch a show, and he was so terrified that he forced himself to trip and fall and sprain his ankle on the way into the meeting so that he wouldn't have to do the meeting.
Oh my gosh.
So people do have a fight or flight response.
I got to get out of here.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Oh wow. Okay. Well, this is something for you to think about. Maybe this is something that would work for you. Maybe you're going to pitch. Maybe you're going to go to an escape room. Maybe you're going to jump out of a plane. Let us know if doing something scary works for you. Let us know on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. Drop us an email at podcast@gretchenrubin.com. Or as always, you can go to the show notes for this episode. That's happiercast.com/195 for everything related to this episode, including a link to the article I mentioned.
Coming up, we've got a gift-giving happiness hack. But first, this break.
There are some stories from our mother's life that I love to hear about. I love hearing about how she played with a tin dollhouse when she was a girl. And just in time for Mother's Day, I found the perfect gift that captures all her stories for our families forever. It's called Storyworth. Storyworth helps you preserve precious memories and stories from your mother and mother figures for years to come. And it makes a wonderful keepsake book so you never, never lose these wonderful stories and memories.
Here's how it works. Each week, Storyworth emails your loved one a thought-provoking question that you get to help pick, like, what was your favorite toy as a little girl, or what was your first job? All your loved one needs to do is respond to that email with a story. Long or short, it doesn't matter. Give all the moms in your life a unique, heartfelt gift you'll all cherish for years, Storyworth. Right now, save $10 on your first purchase when you go to storyworth.com/happier. That's storyworth.com/happier to save $10 on your first purchase. When you're hiring for your small business, you want to find quality professionals that are right for the role. That's why you have to check out LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn Jobs has the tools to help find the right professionals for your team faster and for free. LinkedIn isn't just another job board. LinkedIn has a vast network of more than a billion professionals, which makes it the best place to hire. It gives you access to professionals you can't find anywhere else. LinkedIn does all that while making the process easy and intuitive.
I know that when I've been hiring, it's really hard to do. It's really hard to find quality candidates. It's really hard to handle the process. Hiring is easy when you have lots of quality candidates, like with LinkedIn Jobs. It's so easy, in fact, that 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your job for free at linkedin.com/Gretchen. That's linkedin.com/Gretchen to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply. So, Elizabeth, this week we have a happiness hack related to picking out gifts for people, because we're entering into the holiday season, and this is a challenge for all of us every year, which is you want to buy like a great gift for the people on your list, but sometimes it's hard to come up with those ideas. And Miriam had a great suggestion.
Yeah, she says, each year, instead of writing a wish list, I have my kids write a likes list. They have to list 25 things they love right now. It can be anything: astronomy, gummy bears, travel, weird food, photography, anything. We then distribute the list to their relatives to give a little guidance for gift purchasing during the holiday season. We love this for a bunch of reasons. First, it helps us to avoid focusing too much on consumerism during the holidays, while still giving their faraway grandparents, aunts, and uncles a clue about what interests the kids have right now. Even better, it's given us a really cool look at how the kids have grown over the years. We save the lists and compare them. It's fun to see what they liked at 8 years old versus 12 years old. So this is a great idea.
And it's so many things that are good. First of all, it's more about gratitude and appreciation than like, I want, gimme. Mm-hmm. And then also, it is hard to keep up children. I mean, I remember Jack used to be obsessed with trains, and he was really into dinosaurs, and now he's really into Star Wars. But like, there's like so many varieties of Star Wars, I don't even know. And so having something like this is great for people who need some guidance.
Yeah, and I like the idea that it's not just like listing the items, which is where we go a lot of the time. It's just like taking a picture. Okay, he wants this Nerf gun.
Yeah.
You know, this is, it still gives the people who are getting gifts a little bit of freedom and thought into buying the gift, which I think a lot of people like. They don't want to just be told what to buy.
Well, and it also reminds me, so each year when we go to Christmas at our parents in Kansas City, my mother has these books, and both kids are, and Jack too, when he's there every other year, write their memories of like what happened at Christmas over Christmas holidays. And it's so fun to go back in previous years. And it's like every year we went to Winston's, we made gingerbread cookies, you know, it never changes. Yeah. But it'd be so fun. You could just print out the list, stick it in, and then it'd be this wonderful keepsake that you, you know, you, I think, what a brilliant idea. A likes list. I even like that phrase, a likes list.
Yes. So thank you, Miriam. That is a great hack coming into the holiday season.
Yes. And if you think of picking out gifts as a little bit of a happiness stumbling block, now we have another happiness stumbling block to discuss. And this is related to cell phone etiquette. So, Elizabeth, I was thinking as I was walking down the street about how cell phones, smartphones, it's not clear to everyone what's polite and what's not, because it's still sort of a new technology and people disagree about what's polite. So I came up with a list of questions, and I want to ask you what you think is the right way to behave in these situations, because I do think you're naturally much more considerate than I am. So I would trust your impulses more than mine.
I will say, I just have to say, I'm doing this through a lens of LA, and I think, you know, we are cell phone culture here. So
okay, that part, there could be regional differences. Very
yes,
true.
There absolutely could be.
Okay. Here's the one that inspired me to start thinking about this, Elizabeth. I was walking down the street listening to a podcast with my AirPods in. I ran into somebody that I knew. I stopped the podcast, of course. Is it permissible for me to leave the AirPods in my ear while I talk?
I think it's good to take out one AirPod to show that they have your attention.
Okay.
I think one is enough. You can leave one in and take one out, and then it's easy to put that back in when you're done talking. Taking two out can be a little cumbersome.
Yes. Okay, so taking out one, good compromise there. Okay, now, related question. I'm walking into the drugstore and I'm listening to a podcast with my AirPods in. Is it permissible to leave my AirPods in while I am paying? I'm at the drugstore. It's not like I'm not talking to the clerk. I mean, I would say like, thank you or whatever, but is it permissible to leave the AirPods in?
I think it is permissible as long as you give them a nice smile.
Okay. Okay. So you've got to engage and recognize sort of their humanity, but you can leave the AirPods in. Okay.
Yes.
Okay. This happened to Eleanor when she was walking our dog Barnaby. Okay. This is tricky. You're walking along, you're listening to a podcast, you've got your AirPods in. Your dog is greeting another dog and like they're like wagging their tails, and the other owner is just like standing there and you're standing there and this person does not seem to want to engage. Can you continue to listen to your podcast?
If they don't want to engage, I say yes. If they do want to engage, if they say anything, then I think it's another take one AirPod out.
Okay, because it's sort of like our dogs are doing this, but we're just like, we're in another zone, or like we're going to engage. Because dog owners are very different about that, I have noticed, now that I have a dog. Okay, now, we have a split circuit on this in my household. Everybody agrees that if you're having dinner and you're having pleasant conversation, you should not be on your phone. Yes. However, what if you're having pleasant conversation and somebody wants to look up something related to the conversation? Like, oh, we love the movie Shrek. What year did that movie come out? Let me look on my phone. Is that a permissible use of a phone? Or no, don't use a cell phone if you're having a conversation with people over a meal.
I'd say 100% permissible. Absolutely.
And why is that? Why is that permissible?
Because it's continuing the shared conversation. So it's not taking away from the conversation. It's enhancing the conversation. I mean, we live in a world with cell phones, so I think this artificial not having your cell phone during dinner, you know, doesn't make sense.
Right.
If you're using it to further the conversation.
Right. But if you do that, then you're not supposed to start like checking your feeds.
Yes.
Yes. Which is the temptation sometimes. Okay. Now, do you have this problem? This is a major etiquette problem that I face, which is somebody is like, oh, let me show you this new bookcase that I'm thinking about buying. And they hand me their phone, or wouldn't do it probably if it's a one-off thing. But sometimes if it's like, oh, let me show you, oh, this picture of this vacation we went on, I just automatically start scrolling through, which is super rude. So this is just like, remind
rude.
Me, don't do that. You're only, you can't start poking around in other people's phones.
Yes, you're right. That is rude. Do not do that. I have never done that one time.
You never have?
Never.
It's because you're naturally more mannered than I am. But I think it's just because I'm interested and I'm like, oh, I want to see more. I want to see more. It's like, no, don't do that. Okay. What about this? What do you do if you're talking to somebody And either your phone makes a notification noise, or you're like me and your Apple Watch vibrates, or whatever kind of smart watch you have vibrates, and you have this uncontrollable desire to see what it was. What do you do?
Now, this is an area where I feel like in Los Angeles, we've all just accepted that people look at notifications.
Okay. Now, is it more polite to have your notifications have a sound then so that people understand I'm not just like randomly looking at my phone, but I got a notification? Because it can also vibrate.
Well, that's a tough one because I went through a period of time right when the iWatches started where people would always be glancing at their watch during a meeting. And I was like, God, am I that boring? They're just dying for this meeting to be over. Like, I was really having a complex. Then I realized, oh, they're looking at notifications. And you don't sense at all that a notification has come through.
Yes.
So I'm sort of split on that. If you're getting notification after notification, which some people do, you don't want ding, 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 ding. But if it doesn't happen that often, then I would say leave the sound on.
Right. So that people know, like, oh, something's come in. It's tricky. I think that is something where you kind of have to figure it out for yourself. One thing I would also point out is, like, people not understanding that other people aren't being as rude as you think is a lot of people now, I've noticed, have started taking notes on their phone rather than taking notes. So, like, I was at a school function. I may have mentioned this because it was very striking to me. A school function, and somebody said about somebody else, like, oh, she was so rude the whole time. She was just, like, on her phone instead of listening to the lecturer. And I was like, no, no, no. I know her, and she was taking notes on her phone because she wanted to send them to her husband. Mm-hmm. And so I'm like, you thought she was being inattentive. She was actually frantically writing down everything the person said. So just be aware that sometimes when people are using their phone, it might be like just a form of note taking, or they're using it in some way. It's not that they're not paying attention. Of course, if you're the person giving the talk, it could be very, you know, you're wondering what they're doing on their phones. But okay, here's the last thing. If you are on like a train, let's say, and your phone rings, and it's not necessarily the quiet car, but it's a situation where it just feels like not a place where you should be on your phone. Is it okay if you answer, if you say something like, hey, I'm on the train, I can't talk, you know, what is it? And to kind of indicate to the people in earshot that you're aware that you're kind of not being so polite, but that there's a possibility that there's an emergency, so you're just checking in. Does that, is that okay? Yeah,
I think that's fine, absolutely.
Okay. Yes. All right, well, those are my questions.
These are my edicts. I have no idea if others agree.
Well, we'll hear from listeners. I mean, I think the bottom line of what you said is, like, be considerate for another person. Like, for goodness sake, just, like, don't be a jerk.
But at the same time, we all have to realize this is the world we live in. So it's like artificially keeping cell phones out of it, you know, doesn't, and AirPods and things, doesn't make sense either.
Yeah. Well, like, my mother-in-law is really annoyed when people talk on the phone in public. And I'm just like, that ship sailed.
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
Yeah, like, you can't be annoyed by that. Like, we've all decided as a culture that that is acceptable manners. But I think other things are less settled. Okay, well, if anybody violently agrees or disagrees with the law, Elizabeth, let us know. But I think that's good. That's very helpful for me, Elizabeth, to hear what your instincts are.
Okay, well, I will monitor you next time I see you, see how you're doing.
As I walk around with my AirPods in all the time.
Yeah.
And now for a listener question. As always, you can leave a voicemail question at 774-277-9336. That's 77-HAPPY-336. Or leave us a voice memo or email us at podcast@GretchenRubin.com.
Yeah, and Gretch, as we enter the holiday season, we've got a question that's very timely about celebrating holidays with family. It comes from Erin. She says, my husband and I are originally from Michigan and all of our family still lives there. Both of our parents are remarried, so we have four houses to go to during the holidays. We usually go to Michigan for Thanksgiving and make the rounds to see everyone. However, it really takes the fun out of the holidays when we're rushing around all day. We also have a four-month-old son and want to start some of our own traditions. Do you have any advice on staying happy and relaxed during the holiday madness? I am an obliger and definitely a people pleaser, so meeting everyone's expectations during the holiday really stresses me out. Oh, gosh, so many people face this exact dilemma.
Yeah, it's tough. But I think, Erin, I think the most important thing is what Erin has already done, which is to step back and say, let's have a plan. Let's not just react to what other people suggest or do what we've always done. Having a new baby is a great clean slate to say, okay, going forward, how do we want to balance out everything that we want to get out of this holiday season and really think about what you could do?
Yeah, Gretchen, in my life, Adam and I go back and forth between our family and his family every year for Thanksgiving and Christmas, and that works for us. But once we're at the place, we're at the place. We don't have to rush off anywhere. So I think it's much simpler. I mean, the idea of having to visit four families, and it sounds like it's not even during one trip, it's on that day.
Yeah,
that really would suck the fun out of Thanksgiving. Now, one thing they could do, especially with having a four-month-old who I'm sure is on a pretty strict nap schedule, is say, we're going to be at this house. Please do come visit us and make other people come to you.
Yes. Now, one thing she doesn't say is how well does everybody get along?
Right.
Because it might be that some people are like, that person will never darken my door again.
Right.
You know what I mean?
True.
But if you could, that would be great because then you get the fun of seeing everybody, but then you're not moving because a lot of it is just the moving. See, here's the thing for her is that on the one hand, it's really hard to like race around. But on the other hand, it's really efficient because she is getting to check in with all four households at least once a year. And it seems like if you started doing kind of rotations or something, it could get very complicated and less efficient.
That's true.
Yeah. Now, because I remember with mom and dad, when I was little, you weren't born yet, but I remember them talking about how they decided they'd always gone home to North Platte, where both of them came from, for Christmas. And then they decided once I arrived that they wanted their own house, their own traditions, their own Christmas tree. That's where Santa was going to come, all that. And so they said, you're welcome to come if you want, but we're going to do it at our house. And in that case, it worked fine. And also, like, one set of our grandparents often drove Grandma Kraft with them because it was just easier. They all came together. But here, it's not like they could stay home for Thanksgiving and say, anybody come, because that's a lot of people.
Right.
Maybe
right.
they could, but maybe they couldn't, because it's not just a couple people. It's many people.
Yeah. You know, it's hard in situations where parents are divorced because I feel like all this burden goes on the child to make it work. And I kind of think you can't worry about feeling guilty because, I mean, the parents sort of put you in the situation to have all these different houses to visit. So to me, it's like if you want to visit people, then you should. But if you don't want to do that, you shouldn't feel the pressure.
But that's hard because you do feel like... I don't know.
Yeah,
I can see
it's easier said than done.
Easier said than done. Well, and the fact is, and it's interesting to note, like one of the things that research shows is that having traditions does boost people's happiness. Especially children, it gives them a feeling of security. They really like the fact that, I mean, as anybody who's ever been around children knows, like they tend to like the fact that certain things always unfold the same way. One thing that's good is to remember is that it's just one day. And so not to get over focused, because maybe you're not going to see this household on Thanksgiving. Maybe you'll see them at a different kind of the day. And it doesn't have to be Thanksgiving.
I mean, the question is, instead of saying we're going to do this on Thanksgiving, can you say, OK, we're spending Thanksgiving at household A, but the day after Thanksgiving we'll come to household B for leftovers?
Yeah.
You know, and make, and then you could switch every year whose house you're actually at on Thanksgiving, or just decide, hey, I'm going to be at my mom's house every year for Thanksgiving. The day after we'll go here on Saturday. We'll, you know, go out for Chinese food with this group. You know what I mean? And so make new traditions where you're not rushed. I think it's the rushing around during that day where you feel like you never settle into the holiday.
Yeah, especially with a little kid. Well, and it's always good as an obliger to remember that sometimes you can tell yourself, if I say yes to some people, I have to say no to others. Because sometimes for an obliger, they want to say yes to everyone. And just remind yourself that you're saying no to somebody. And maybe that's you, maybe that's your new baby. But you want to think about who do you want to say yes to and what are your values there. It's complicated. It's a complicated situation.
I would just say it's your Thanksgiving too. So you should enjoy it. Like, you shouldn't just be doing things for other people. That's not right. And I don't think that's a good thing to show your baby.
That's right. So good luck, Erin. Let us know what system
that
you
is a dicey
you land
situation.
On.
Speaking of holidays, coming up, Gretchen gives herself a holiday-related demerit. But first, this break.
Building a portfolio with Fidelity Basket Portfolios is kind of like making a sandwich. It's as simple as picking your stocks and ETFs, sort of like your meats and other toppings, and managing it as one big, juicy investment. Mmm, now that's pretty good. Learn more at fidelity.com/baskets. Investing involves risk, including risk of loss. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC. Member NYSE SIPC.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. It can be easy to ignore our social battery and spread ourselves thin, especially with social gatherings picking up after the winter. Gretchen, you know I love to socialize, but I need to do it in a way that's good for me, that doesn't drain my battery. And therapy can really help figure out what works for you, what doesn't work for you, so that you're not just spending out too much of your social energy.
If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/GretchenRubin today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/GretchenRubin.
Okay, Gretch, it's time for demerits and gold stars, and you are up with a happiness demerit.
Okay, so you know how, like in the Happiness Project, or maybe it was Happier at Home, I don't remember. In one of those books, I talk about, oh, have a holiday breakfast. And I'm a big fan of the holiday breakfast. It's small, it's manageable, it's super fun. You take a picture, it starts the day out in this great way. Okay, Halloween came this year, and I didn't do a holiday breakfast for Halloween. And it was so far out of my mind that I didn't even notice that I had forgotten for like 3 days until I happened to open a cabinet. Aww. And then I saw, like, my eye fell on like our special Halloween plates. And I was like, oh my goodness, I completely forgot about the holiday breakfast. Like, what a ball drop.
Did Eleanor say anything? She didn't notice either?
She didn't notice either. But she would have noticed if I'd done the holiday breakfast, because usually it's like, I have these orange placemats, I have these cool black plates that have sort of like skeleton monsters. I dyed some peanut butter black so that she has like black peanut butter on her peanut butter and toast, which is what she has for breakfast often. It's always so fun. Oh, I have a candle shaped like a pumpkin. And
you're too busy.
So annoyed with myself.
Gretch, I have to tell you, we did not even get a pumpkin, which, I mean, I have an 8-year-old child, and we did not go to a pumpkin patch or get a pumpkin. And I apologize. I said, Jack, I'm so sorry we didn't get a pumpkin. And he said, well, that's all right. We're really going to go all the way for Christmas. So.
Oh, good. Is that the spirit?
So.
Yeah, there you go.
I'm getting lights this
Excellent.
Year. So you'll hear about that. Finally getting Christmas lights put up. I cannot wait.
You've had Christmas lights before.
Yes, but it fell apart. So I've got a new system in place. It's going to be great.
Okay, we will stay tuned for that. Now, what? So you're going to get an anticipatory gold star for the amazing light show that you're going to have for Christmas. What's your other gold star for this week?
Okay, well, I have to give a gold star to Adam and a bunch of parents from the school we go to who did the Spartan race. And if
what
you don't
that?
Know what a Spartan race is, it's like a 3 to 5 mile course has 30 obstacles you have to do. And these are really hard obstacles, like climbing ropes and carrying 60-pound buckets up a hill and climbing over walls and this crazy stuff. And if you can't do an obstacle, you're supposed to do 30 burpees, which is when hop on the ground and do a push-up and jump up. And those are very hard in and of themselves.
Yes, they are.
And a bunch of parents did it, and Adam did it as well. And he made great time. He did it in, I think, an hour and a half, which was fast.
Really?
He pushed himself to the brink. I was, like, you know, terrified he was going to drop. And Jack and I went, and we tried to cheer him on whenever we could see him, which was only, you know, like a couple of times throughout the race. But anyway, he just went so far out of his comfort zone, as did the rest of these parents. I mean, these are not people who, I don't think anyone had ever done a Spartan race before.
Wow.
And they went, they had t-shirts, and they just had a great attitude. I mean, I just couldn't partake. Everyone was like, Liz, you should do it. You should do it. Like I said, I don't want to be scared, I was like, no, I'm not doing the Spartan race.
Well, do you think doing something scary like that, did Adam feel like less stressed and less tired and kind of euphoric at the end? I mean, maybe not right at the very end, but like after he'd had a little recovery?
Yes, he did. I think it's had a great impact on him. I think he feels great that he did it. I think it did boost his confidence. And just stepping outside of a comfort zone is so powerful.
It is.
So I'm very proud of all of them. I give them all a big gold star, but I can't say, oh, I'm going to do it next year, because let's face it, I'm not.
Yeah. Know thyself.
It was really hard. I mean, Adam was like in shell shocked afterwards. He was just like, But anyway, he did it and we're proud of him.
Excellent. And that is it for this episode of Happier. Remember to try this at home, like Adam. Do something scary. Let us know if you tried it and if it worked for you.
Thank you to our producer, Cameron Drews. Also, thanks to Kristen Meinzer and Andy Bowers of Panoply. Get in touch. Gretchen's on Twitter at Gretchen Rubin, and I'm at Elizabeth Kraft. Our email address is podcast@gretchenrubin.com.
And if you like this show, you know what I'm going to say. Please be sure to tell a friend. Show them how to subscribe to a podcast if they don't know how. And subscribe to us yourself. An Apple Podcast, Google Podcast, or your favorite podcasting app. The resources for this week: you can subscribe for email updates, and then you'll get every time I have a new blog post. Like, I have a lot of interviews with authors, and every month I share a list of every book I read that month. And then I write all kinds of blog posts about various sort of adventures and happiness and good habits. If you've already subscribed to my main monthly newsletter, you can update your subscription preferences at GretchenRubin.com/#newsletter. Yes, that's very weird. It's .com/#newsletter. And that's where you can pick and choose among all my newsletters, my Moment of Happiness newsletter, whatever you want. And one of the things that also that you can ask for at GretchenRubin.com/resources, no hashtag there, confusingly, is you can get a sample chapter from the Happiness Project. So if you've been hearing me talk about the 10th anniversary edition, or you're wondering whether it would make a good gift for somebody and you wanted to sort of check it out, you can get a sample chapter there so you can see if it's what you want. And speaking of the Happiness Project, I have a new course that's starting in January. This is something brand new. People have been asking me to do something like this for years. It's finally just about ready. It's called the Happiness Project Experience. It's going to be a video course that will take you through your own Happiness Project, give you ideas, hold you accountable. Obligers, I know you need it. You can sign up for the waitlist at courses.gretchenrubin.com/happiness. And as always, all the stuff will be in the show notes. So stay tuned for a flash sale for that in December. It's all going to start in January.
Until next week, I'm Elizabeth Kraft.
And I'm Gretchen Rubin. Thanks for joining us. Onward and upward.
I don't know about you, but I'm always looking for ways for my son to get involved and give back in our local community. That's why I'm excited to tell you about Student Visionaries of the Year, a campaign by Leukemia and Lymphoma Society, the largest nonprofit organization dedicated to creating a world without blood cancers.
Student Visionaries of the Year is a 7-week philanthropic leadership development program for high school students. Participants form strong teams and fundraise in honor of a pediatric blood cancer survivor in their local community. This program is transformative. It not only helps students develop valuable life skills like project management, communication, financial literacy, and entrepreneurship, not to mention it looks great on college applications, but most importantly, is also a chance for them to engage in meaningful work within their community and make a real impact on blood cancer patients and their families. You can learn more about Student Visionaries of the Year or even nominate a student at lls.org/students. That's lls.org/students.